You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, the author of The Synagogue of Satan. Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, David. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Andrew, I want to get into Synagogue of Satan in a few moments, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are and how you came to write this book?
Well, I live in London, in England, and about the time of the Oklahoma bombing, I started looking at the internet and stuff with conspiracy theory, and I'd always known about things like JFK and what have you. I was always interested in that kind of thing when I was younger. I was born in 1973, and all through my teenage years and things, I was always interested if I could ever catch a show on the conspiracy behind Kennedy and different things like that, I would look at it. And with the advent of the internet, I just started looking at things further. But the key point for me from the Oklahoma City bombing, living in London, you see lots of IRA bombings in London, and you can see the building, when a bomb is in it, is blown out. When you looked at the Oklahoma City bombing, it was so obviously blown out, and where the bomb was supposed to have been parked, you know, 100 yards away or whatever, for blowing that inwards, it simply wasn't possible, and you didn't need any interest in physics to work that out. It was just patently obvious based upon what I'd seen in my life. So that led me to, I think it was another Hoffman guy who wrote a book about that. He was one of the only people ever charged in relation to the, I think it was called the Oklahoma City bombing and the politics of terror. I think it might have been David Hoffman. And you couldn't get that anywhere. I found it on the internet. I read that. And then that started leading me to other things. And then I got into David Icke. And I'd actually seen him at university in 1991. He came and did a talk there, Alex Jones. And then when you start to do your own research and you go past the so-called truth seekers out there, like your mainstream, they're just working for the bad guys to try and stop you finding out who the bad guys really are. And then it always leads you to this Jewish clique at the top. And as my research has gone on and on, it's not so much a Jewish clique at the top. I think it spreads to all Jews everywhere. And the key point I would say on that is how many people listening know a Jew who will have a relative or an ancestor that died in the Holocaust and all this sort of stuff. And that's how you know, folks, that all Jews are involved. But basically, I ended up putting research together. I was listening to lots and lots of different shows. I'd hear, say, loads of shows on Kennedy. And I started noting down and trying to find out what I thought was the right story. And at the same time, I was investigating the Rothschild family and what have you. So I put it all together, like in a timeline. I didn't know how to file it, how to record it. And so I thought, well, if I put it in date order, it'd be easy for me to find it. So I just typed it all up on a Word document and did that. That got bigger and bigger, and Daryl Bradford Smith of The French Connection, I emailed it to him because his was one of the shows I listened to. He put it up. He was working with someone else at the time, Eric Huffschmidt, as I recall, and he used to email me, and he kind of covered that area. So I said I had an update for him. He'd say send it to me and he'd upload it to the site. Different things like that, and then it just moved on from there, really. It got too big, if you like, to be on a website. So I looked at publishing, and I knew I'd be self-publishing. I printed 500 copies myself. I started sending them out to different people around the world, and I set up a one-page website. Daryl Bradford Smith had me as a guest. At some point, I think it came out September 2006, and Tex Mars, who I'd sent a copy to, I got an email from him a few weeks after he received it. I got it from Jerry, his assistant, who does the show, and said that he was really, really pleased with it. And he ended up publishing it in March of 2007. He took out a full-page advert in the American Free Press. And it went from there. And basically, I decided to write a completely different book in 2010. So I took a couple of years out to do that. And I still had time to update the Synagogue of Satan book from the 60,000 word one it was into 144,000 words that it is now. And also, whereas the original copy ended in 2006, about September time, this one ends at the very end of 2011. And it just gave me the opportunity, all the different things that I'd learned, all the books I'd read, because we bring out a book like this and people start emailing you and say, have you seen this? Or have you seen this? Or have you seen this? And all the time you're kicking yourself thinking, I wish I could have included this in the book. But I had the opportunity and the good fortune to be able to include it in, you know, have a second bite of the cherry, if you like, at this book. And one thing I threw in straight away was the Complete Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. By putting that in the book, it's saving people money that they don't have to buy that on its own. And it's so relevant to their plan because you can reference most of what they've been up to, these Jews, to your passages within the protocols. And I also gave an excerpt of each one of Henry Ford's articles, The International Jew, because that's another four-volume set that is quite difficult to get hold of. And then apart from that, I put some Holocaust material in there, which I didn't want to put in the first edition. You know, I was new and it was all quite daunting what I was doing. And that was part of the research I did. So I did a recent article, actually. It was a Holocaust article. Holocaust or Holohoax, you be the judge. If you just type that into Google, then that'll take you to the article. It was coming up at the top last time I looked. And most of that was lifted from this book because I'd done the research and what have you. So it's quite a big book. It's large format. 428 pages, and I'd say 28 pages of that is the index on its own. So it's got a great big index to it. The reason I think people should have this book is it kind of covers everything. So whereas, say, if I focus on the Kennedy assassination, for example, I'll take you two clear points for me, and that's the Executive Order 11110 that recently people are starting to discredit, and they're focusing more on the David Ben-Gurion response to what Kennedy said about Israel will never be given the bomb. I think that that was a key point as to why Kennedy was assassinated. And as well, I'll bring up the USS Liberty attack and what really went on there. Now, in those two things, I'll probably do two or three paragraphs each. And people have written whole books on this subject. But I try to cover the salient points. That's why my book's got a 30-page index to it, because it covers so many different forms of history. And if you're only going to have one book on who really controls the world and this Jewish influence, then this is the one you need. And it's the only reason I wrote it, because it wasn't written as a book. It was written as a Word document for me to be able to stop listening to the same shows over and over again, and actually doing my own research combined with what I'm listening to, so I could find out, you know, who was lying to me on the air and who was telling me the truth on the air. And that's how it came about.
It's very important, I think, because if anybody had any doubt, or if they didn't really understand what these people are up to, all they have to do is get this book. And I mean, literally, it kind of slams you. It's like you're getting slapped in the face. Every date in there, every year, it's like another slap and go, okay, here you go. You know, versus like a typical book that you would read. Your book, for me anyway, it did slap me in the face constantly, because the evidence is there. You bring forth the evidence and you basically just lay it there in front of people. And for anybody to then deny that there is some kind of scheme, some kind of a grand plan going on, I think that then that type of person would be, as you just explained, would be one of the bad guys. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes, because the way I present it is kind of without emotion. I just give you the facts, and then just as you're digesting that, I move on to the next subject. That's the whole point of the book, is to really be a compendium, if you like, of a lot of stories that the listeners will know and a lot of stories that the listeners won't know. So it's what I found out over time. It's just a case of putting it all together. I think that where people go wrong, and a lot of researchers go wrong, is they try and make things overlong. And unfortunately, in this day and age, and I'm as guilty of this as others, if someone sends me an article and says, oh, have a look at this, and then I sort of see where the bar is on the right, and if it's really small, I quickly scroll up and down. It looks absolutely massive. I don't have the time to read that. You know, what is it about? What are the key points? If someone's going to write something that long, they should be putting it in a book. People right. don't read something that lengthy off a computer. I'm sorry to have to say that, but that's the way it is. And rather than people argue that and say, oh, well, people are stupid and they should read more and what have you, I agree in that point that people, especially the actual indigenous people of America, and I'm referring to the white founding fathers and the same in the white nations of Europe, I would say, if these people and their descendants actually read more, then we wouldn't be in the problem that we are today with the Jews. But they've been so dumbed down that you have to engineer the way that you write and the way that you do articles or books or whatever in order to get people's attention. People don't have the attention span that they had 30, 40, 50 years ago. If you imagine a world back then where you're buying a book, it was like, wow, I've bought a book. Get hold of like, I don't know, a hardback book from like 1975 or 1978. And you look at the price in the cover and you'll think, that's $8, $9. I can buy some hardback books for $8, $9 today. And you think, well, how is that? Well, you see, back then, that was a treasure. Someone would save up to buy that book, and then they'd have it, and they'd read every page slowly because it was the book that they bought. But now there's so much out there. It's this overabundance of information on the internet that people are being slammed left, right, and centre with all the different things going on. They don't know where to look. And this is the big scam that all these well-known, and I say so-called conspiracy theorists, because unless they're identifying the Jews as the problem, then they're part of the problem. End of. And I don't care if they want to turn around and they do a little, like David Icke, Rothschild Zionists. You know, it's just absolute. I mean, it's just absolute. What can you say? I mean, talk about a coward. Absolute coward. And a lot of people do that. And all these so-called mainstream, oh, well, I don't want to say anything nationalistic because some of my listeners are black and some of my readers are black. Well, you know, I don't care one way or another. I'm not going to change my output and my research to benefit whoever might be listening to me. Whether people like me or not, my research is going to be my research and it's going to be what I find out. And I'm not going to adjust it. I've got on my bookshelf what I consider the two best books on slavery. And that's two Nation of Islam books, which is The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. They're both difficult to get. Volume 1, and there's also a Volume 2, which is twice the size, goes in further detail. But I'm not at all a believer in Islam or a sympathiser with Islam. But out there, they've put a book together, and they've got no axe to grind. To hear Farrakhan recently, and he's basically turned around and said, yeah, the time has come for us to now slaughter the white race. So it's pretty obvious what he thinks, but they still bought it in them to bring that book out. Now, even though I've got no allegiances with them whatsoever, the research in there is right in the same way, and I've still got to go through it. I've got You Gentiles by Morris Samuel and Jews Must Live by Samuel Roth. I sometimes get those two muddled up. Another case in point, Germany Must Perish, Theodor Kaufmann. These are all Jews, but these are Jews that are telling you what they're really up to. And these are books that are important for people to read. And so you can see from their own mouth, and then you'll start to see the backpedaling going on. Oh yeah, but that was mistranslated, or this Harold Rosenthal document, that's an obvious fake. You know, I get confused with Jewish lies because one minute they're telling me that the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion are a forgery, and a forgery is an exact copy of an original. Well, whoever wrote it then, they should find out who he was and, you know, make him Nostradamus or something like that, because he was prophetic. It was obviously a prophetic book because that's what's happening. And then to see all these different things, oh, in one breath, Henry Ford, he was an anti-Semite. There was some book I found just by chance, you know, sometimes you're looking for something on Amazon and it says people who looked at this, looked at that. And someone had put a book, I think 2004, I can't even remember the title, thankfully. But it was a real hatchet job on Henry Ford and how such a brilliant man could have such anti-Semitic beliefs and how awful it was. But then I know someone that's been over to the Ford Museum and they've asked about the Dearborn Independent and the International Jew and they hadn't even heard of it. You know, they're not going to put that in the Ford Museum. They're not going to put any element of his life there. The Jews were constantly attacking. He had a couple of, I think it was after the second attempt on his life that he just wound it in. And that was when he put an apology and suddenly the Jews were his best friend. Oh, Henry Ford's lovely after all. We really like Henry Ford. And that's what Jews do. They are pure evil. And it's as simple as that. All of them, everywhere, they practice a state within a state, as Hitler made quite clear. And I read Mein Kampf recently, the full translation, which is excellent. I read it twice. I got the audio version. I listened to it a couple of times. Mein Kampf is a two-volume set. I think one was 1924 and 1926. I think each of them were published subsequent years. But in the first volume, he makes it clear that there are Negroes, he says, in Germany. And he basically shows you how the Jews brought them in. And then as soon as they bring them in, they promote the race mixing and all this sort of stuff. And that's what you see on the television time and time again. It doesn't have to be a drama. It's on your standard news bulletin. You've got a black man sitting there with a white woman next to him. Go figure, folks. And then you wonder why you're looking out on the street and all these white women are going for black men. Well, it's very simple. They make the black man out to be some virile, masculine man. And then they're encouraging all the white males to explore their feminine side and carry handbags around and wave their little pinky out. And then on top of that, you've got the bands that are promoted, say, the black men. It's all this rap and filth and stuff like that, whereas the white men are portrayed in bands like Coldplay. And whenever they're pushing all the homosexuality, it's always the white men that are representative. So constantly the Jews, through their media, are pushing this diatribe of the white man is just an effeminate weakling and the black man is the true male that a white woman should go for. With the end result being that they'll get rid of the entire white race, which is what the Jews have been after since day one. They even come out and admit it now on so many places on the internet. These rabbis are coming out and what have you. Because we're in the end game. This is why we've got all the immigration coming into Europe. It's this final push. So people just have to be aware and stop trying to be worried about saying something because it might affect their chances of getting hold of a prospective partner. You know, I've seen this happen. It makes me laugh so much. You'll see a group of people out and you can see someone wants to say something, but they want to get lucky with one of the women later on. So they think, well, they better not say how they really think. They'll just come up with some liberal thing that'll tickle their ears.
I'm so glad to hear you talking about this the way you are, because in our line of work, we really don't see much progress in the sense of people understanding really what's going on and the point where we're at. of course, a lot of times we're accused of preaching to the choir, but we've never spoke before at length like this. And it's refreshing to hear your take on it, because it's exactly the way I feel. And I just wish that there were more people who understood what we understand. And the only reason we understand this is because we read and we study and we research and we pay attention, because anybody could do it. I mean, anybody could pick up the Synagogue of Satan and understand a lot of what we've taken years to learn. I love listening to folks who have come to the point where we are at, or we have been for a little while, because I ask them, hey, are you an anti-Semite? Do you not like Jews? Does that have anything to do with why you're talking about this? Invariably, all of them say, no, I never even paid attention to Jews before. But what happens is, as you explained, is that once you dig into really to find out who's at the pinnacle, who is the bad guy, it always comes back to the Jews. And for somebody to ignore that, and we were talking a little bit earlier before the show about one of the top people, I guess he is the top person in the conspiracy world, this Alex Jones guy. And he's got to know what we know, right? Do you think he knows, or do you think he's just stupid?
Well, I think the most revealing thing of the David Duke interview that went viral, because Duke just put that idiot away, was when he turned round and he suddenly said, oh, I had to get Rob Jacobson involved because Alex Jones was getting so hammered. Alex Jones said, oh, this guy's been my boss for 9 years or something like that. And so he's had a Jewish boss all that time. Well, we all knew he had a Jewish wife and Jewish kids, but he's got a Jewish boss. And then you listen to what this Jacobson demon comes out with. And straight away he's on to Duke, and he's talking about Jekyll Island, and he's naming non-Jewish people. Oh, are they a Jew? Are they a Jew? All with the Federal Reserve. Now, I couldn't have written anything better for Jacobson to say, because again, he's showing me that all Jews are involved. And that is because what Jews do is they always stick a non-Jew at the front, so they'll take the flak, and they're the ones in the background. And he's just demonstrating that point, because he's a tribe member. He knows how all his racial brothers and sisters carry on, and he's well trained in that. And as a result, he comes out and he says what he says. And he just reveals exactly what it says in the protocols, which is we'll get control of people we can corrupt and pay them what we need to, as little as possible. And they'll be the people at the front. So all the stupid English people or French people or American people will believe that we've put this English, French or American person up there, and they're representing their interests. But actually, they're doing our bidding. But people will believe that because they're of the same race. Well, Jacobson just answered that perfectly, the way that the Jews do it. And even if you look at the Elizabeth Dodham volume set on the slave trade, and it shows you quite clearly that the ships were all Jew-owned, but a non-Jew would be a captain, etc. So that for me was key. The other thing is that if you look at the operation that they've got a massive staff out. Well, you know, if you've got two or three people working for you, you've got a massive staff. I don't know anybody in this movement, if you want to call it that, that actually has a staff. Any researchers or what have you, they're kind of them on their own, and they're Skyping and they're doing shows and they're maintaining their own website and stuff like that. When you look at someone, they've got a website, you look at the show you did and you talk about the money he's having to pay his ex-wife each month. You know, what the hell's the guy making if he's paying all that out?
Right.
It's just absolute nonsense. You're not going to be paid that sort of money for telling the truth. The Jews will have had your knees long before then. And would you work for a Jew boss?
Me personally?
What I'm saying is, in the conspiracy realm, someone phoned you up and said, oh, Dave, you know, I really like your work, so I want you to come and work for us. We've got a paper, radio show, whatever. I want you to work for us, and the boss is Jaime Goldstein, and they'll be editing your program. Would you go and do that?
I mean, I might as well just get out of this field that I'm in, because I would never do it. I mean, because then I'd be a fraud.
Yeah, and that's my whole point. So you can't have someone with a Jewish station manager, as what he said. And then I put that up, right? And this is the sort of idiot. Well, I wouldn't even give them the courtesy to call them idiots, just its that are out there. Someone came and said, oh, I think he was making a joke about Rob Jacobson being his boss for 9 years. Well, where did the guy pop up from? What do you mean, that he's not his boss for 9 years, that he's never been his boss? Well, why are you suddenly going and defending this guy when he gets absolutely hammered? And then you're rushing out to defend him again. It's amazing to me. It really is. There are some people out there. That is why the white race is just such a disappointment. And I feel disgusted by a lot of them, quite frankly, because you can beat them and beat them and beat them and beat them, and they'll still come back for more. They're like a battered wife who constantly beaten by a husband, and then the police turn up and it's like, he didn't do anything wrong, he didn't do anything wrong. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. I mention this because I've recently finished a load of the speeches and the Mein Kampf book, but the whole ethos of what Hitler was about was instilling masculinity, responsibility in people. And I'm not a National Socialist, but certainly there are views of his that are sadly lacking from our race today.
That's right.
Because, say, for example, you've got a problem coping with something or giving something up, whether it's drinking or drugs or smoking or whatever, we're told, oh, go and get counselling. You know, the attitude in the past was be a man. You know, if you're going to let that beat you, how are you going to cope with other things in life? But people have been so feminised and so watered down, which is a Jewish plan to take your courage away. Because when you look in history and you see that the Jews were kicked out of all these countries over 100 times, because they were kicked out multiple times, how many countries of them aren't white nations? There aren't any, are there?
Right.
Because it was only ever the white race that kicked them out, because the white race were the only people with the kahunas to take them on. They could go into any African country. You look at South Africa, for example. Only recently, when I did my article, Holocaust or Holohoax, You Be the Judge, the first Holocaust book, if you will, which was a pamphlet called Did 6 Million Really Die, which was written by Richard E. Harwood in 1974. That was the first one straight on the subject. John Beattie talked about it in his 1951 book, The Iron Curtain Over America, and he gave some very revealing to come out with it that soon, which is just when they started to float the figure. And he talked about the figures in the almanac and how they didn't reflect this so-called 6 million dead. But going back to the Did 6 Million Really Die book, which is the book that Sandel got prosecuted over in Canada for importing. In 1976, the South African Board of Deputies of Jews in South Africa, I mean, these people, they get everywhere, don't they? Back in 76, they managed to get it banned from South Africa. You see them all over the place. There's Jewish communities. You think you've got a Chinatown in every country in the world. You've got a Jewish community in every country in the world. And it's generally in every government of the world as well. And it's like holding the strings and lifting people's arms and legs up as to what all the senior politicians are going to do, because they control it. And as a result, what you have is this constant dumbing down and this constant persecution of the white race, because the Jews want the world that they control. And they'll constantly promote, oh, we need diversity. Does anyone notice that diversity is simply one-way traffic from every sub-race? And that's what they are, because that's what they always referred to. They were referred to as the sub-races up until the 1950s. So I'm not interested in all these new terms, or you can't say coloured, and you can't say this, and you can't say that. They bring them into all the white nations, and then they encourage them to procreate with the native white people. You don't get diversity. There's no big push for diversity to go into China, because there's too many Chinese, or Japan, because there's too many Japanese, or Brazil, because there's too many Brazilians. No, you don't. But you do see it going all four corners of the globe. You see it going into America, which is white. You see it going into Europe, which is white. You see it going into Australia, which is white. You see South Africa, which was essentially a white colony on a complete wasteland that whites set up, and it became the only place in Africa that was close to a first world developed country. The rest of Africa was just a hovel. As soon as the white race built it up, the mistake that they made was when they all went over there and built up this area that the blacks weren't even living in, they stupidly employed blacks who were coming over and saying, oh, what are they up to over there, to help build what they were building. And as a result, of course, the Jews got involved and they got all the stuff that the whites had created and gave it to the blacks. And then you look at it today, and you look, as soon as Mandela got into power, you had the biggest rape rate in the whole world in South Africa. When there was apartheid, you didn't have the problems that you have. You know, they were unheard of. But that's the point. If you put these people in charge of white people, that's what's going to happen. And that's why it's Jewish by design. If people can't see that they are being constantly attacked on a daily basis, if you look at historical facts and you look at almanacs and what have you, you will see 100 years ago, the white race represented over a third of the world's population. You know what we are today? Less than 10%. And I would wager even less than that. And the reason I'd say less than that is because how do you define white? Well, how do you define English? How do you define American? Well, oh, if you're born there, then you're American. So on that basis, if a dog's born in a stable, that must make it a horse. Because it's where it's born, isn't it? It's not what species or breed or bloodline it is. Funnily enough, I did another article, Dave, called Jewish Genocide of the White Race Case Closed. And that's where I go into it. And I show you Barbara Lerner Spector And then there's another guy below, Irving Cohn. He's in another Scandinavian country, sat next to another Edomite Jew. He makes the comment that, oh, Norway hasn't had this before, so we've got a job to do to get multiculturalism. Notice how they're really going after the Scandinavian nations. I mean, I've actually been there recently to Norway and Sweden and Denmark, and they're beautiful countries with beautiful architecture and predominantly white people, and that's why they're hitting them now, because they've got to get rid of everybody. They can't leave one white nation unpolluted. But notice at the same time, the only racial state in the world is Israel. You have That's to right. be Jewish. You have to be Jewish. It's so important. You've got to be a Jew. But everywhere else, if you want to protect your white heritage, you're a racist. But if you're a Jew and you want to protect being Jewish, oh, that's wonderful, because of the Holocaust and how the evil white man tried to kill all these Jews. They killed 6 million, even though we Jews took down a plaque at Auschwitz that said 4 million Jews died here and replaced it with 1.5 million Jews died here. We didn't reduce the figure by 2.5 million.
Andy, I love you. I love you, man.
You look at the plaque at Auschwitz. That's what they've done. So what I'd like to know is why the Jews that have done that haven't been prosecuted under the Holocaust laws for denying the 6 million figure.
Because that's anti-Semitic.
Exactly.
You should bring a case. But he's not a Jew. He can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's beautiful. What you're saying is so beautiful. It's over. I just hope, and I hate to use that word, but I hope that people start to wake up, because in the past, I would say that one of the ways to defeat the Jews, and even saying that, to defeat the Jews, that's something radical. It's really not anything radical, because it has to be done. Once people understand what they're doing, as you have figured out, and you express and explain so eloquently, once they understand what they have done and what they are doing, they realize this isn't a joking matter. This is a matter of survival, illustrated by the white population decrease, the dramatic white population decrease. What you explained about the Nation of Islam, that was Dr. Tony Martin. Sadly, he passed on just recently. Unfortunately.
I've seen that lecture, yeah.
Yes, beautiful. And what you explained about the protocols of the learned elders of Zion being a forgery, even that, okay, it's a forgery. Does that mean that it's a fraud? Well, no, that means it's a forgery. They lifted it from, but what did they lift it from? Isn't anybody out there in the mainstream who would say that? No, of course not, because they control all of the media. That's why Lucky Lindbergh in the summer of 1941 was explaining that the Jews control the media and they want to get into World War II. That's 74 years ago the Jews controlled the media. What's it like now? You think it's more solidified now? Of course. They control everything. So people need to wake up. They need to pick up this book, The Synagogue of Satan. It is a big book, like you said. I have it right in front of me, 428 pages. That's with the index included. Here's the definitive proof that there is something afoot. And if you don't know it, hey, even if you do know it, pick up the book and get slapped.
Basically, anyone who's got the original book, it'll have everything of that in Not a Word Change, plus all the additional information. And I just wanted to bring this up because you brought up the Protocols of Learned Elders of Zion. This is one of the updates to the new book, and this is from 1935. The May 14th edition of the New York Post states the following. We rejoice to learn that on May 14th, 1935, the Cantonal Court of Bern, Switzerland, openly denounced the so-called Protocols of the Elders of Zion as forgeries, obvious plagiarism, immoral, and manifestly prepared for the purpose of inciting popular passion against the Jews. Firstly, why would a newspaper rejoice at anything when they make out that they are objective and simply report the news? Also, why does it state the protocols are a forgery, the definition of which is an almost identical copy of an original document as opposed to a fake, which is something that is not genuine? We then discover something the New York Post don't rejoice about. Indeed, they do not even print the story, along with the rest of the mainstream press. The story being in relation to the trial above, 1935 now. The defendants were acquitted by the Swiss Court of Appeals on November 1, 1937. The principal defendant, Silvio Schnell, also had the entire 30,000 francs cost of the trial that had been billed to him borne by the state. The decision to overturn the verdict and reverse the cost was not a difficult one to come to when it was discovered that the original judge, a Jew, Judge Mayer, did not allow any of the 40 witnesses for the defence to testify, whilst all 16 of the witnesses provided by the complainant, the Federation of Jewish Communities of Switzerland, had been allowed to testify. So all their 16 witnesses can testify, all the defendants 40 can't. Furthermore, the proceedings of the trial were not taken down by an official of the court as Swiss law demanded. Instead, they were recorded by two Jewish stenographers, which were supplied by the plaintiffs. So there you go. So basically, when people turn around and say that it was proved to be a forgery in Switzerland, they don't tell you that in 1937 that was overturned and it was shown that it wasn't a forgery. And it also shows that the only forgery in that trial was the fact you had a Jewish judge that was biased towards the Jews. As usual.
Right, absolutely. Again, all anybody has to do is just read, and they can find all this stuff out. The first edition came out in 2005, you said?
2006.
Okay, and then this one was 5 years later, in 2011. They were very busy in those 5 years. I don't really have much hope that people are going to wake up. What's your view about people waking up? I know you're in the trenches here, and we're kind of like preaching to the choir, and we don't really have much time to mingle with the unwashed or washed masses. It really doesn't matter because so few people are awake. But what's your view about the future, about hope? And how does that tie into the book, The Synagogue of Satan?
Well, I mean, The Synagogue of Satan is a book. Funnily enough, I read the updated version about a year ago. At the end of it, I was quite depressed, really. I found it a very depressing book because it's, of course, a catalogue of what the Jews have done to the white race. In the updated version, I go into the Magna Carta, but then it jumps forward to 1648 or what have you. And then it's just going on and on with all the different things that they're up to, even things like a story I touched on a couple of years ago, well, probably 4 years ago now, where they've managed to get state funding for a Jewish-only school, like you call Hebrew Academy in America. In North London, so all the Jews could go there, and it had to be Jewish teachers. And we might let non-Jews in, you know, and they do. They'll let the odd token black in, but you won't see any whites there. They basically give them the facilities that you wouldn't find in most private schools, but they're getting them for free, and they've got them off the government, the taxpayer, and everything for free because they've got the money to send their kids to private schools, but they don't want to do that because they're greedy, and they'd rather get the state to pay for it and then ring fence it and do that. And you see it time and time again, and the Jews as a race absolutely disgust me, and they should disgust any right-thinking person. But my view is that we just need to keep spreading this message. Now, I said earlier that the white race, I have not a lot of time for them because they don't seem to do anything. I mean, if I'd have been alive when all these non-whites were coming into the country, I would have been on the streets fighting them hand-to-hand combat. I'd have been rallying up people to keep doing it. And I'd have got to the bottom of who was doing that then. But my ancestors just sat there and thought, oh, that's just a few blacks. Oh, we're just helping them. No one wants to work on the trains, so they're coming to do that. No one wants to do this, so they're coming to do that. Not looking at the fact that World War II was basically designed to wipe out a lot of the white race so they could bring all these non-whites in with the aim of conducting the Coudenhove-Kalergi plan. He said in his book, Practical Idealism, and this is 1923 now, the man of the future will be a mongrel. Today's races and classes will disappear owing to the disappearing of space-time and prejudice. The Eurasian Negroid race of the future, similar in its outward appearance to the ancient Egyptians, will replace the diversity of peoples with a diversity of individuals. What mainly separates the Jews from the average city dwellers is the fact that they are an inbred people. Strength of character paired with sharpness of the mind predestinates the Jews in their most excellent specimen to become the leaders of urbane humanity, from the false to the genuine spiritual aristocrats to the protagonists of capitalism as well as of the revolution. So there he's admitting Russian Revolution, French Revolution. I won't read the whole quote, but I'll just say Coudenhove-Kalergi confirms the Warburg brackets Rothschild family financing of his movement in a later autobiography in which he states, at the beginning of 1924, we received a call from Baron Louis de Rothschild. One of his friends, Max Warburg, had read my book and wanted to get to know us. To my great surprise, Warburg spontaneously offered us 60,000 gold marks to tide the movement over for its first 3 years. And so you've got the Jews everywhere. Max Warburg, of course, he says here, Max Warburg, who was one of the most distinguished and wisest men I've ever come into contact with, had a principle of financing these movements. He remained sincerely interested in Pan-Europe for his entire life. Max Warburg arranged my 1925 trip to the United States to introduce me to Paul Warburg and financier Bernard Baruch. Now, I'm sure the listeners and American Free Press readers will be certainly familiar with the Warburgs and Baruch. Coudenhove-Kalergi is a bit of a new one. I only found out about him earlier in the year. But, you know, that's how far back it goes, Dave. These people were working back then, basically mongrelizing the white race.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to say, well, does that matter? It doesn't matter. It's only the colour of your skin. Well, then you should turn me off then, because you don't want to listen to me, folks. Okay, because my point is, I didn't choose the fact that my heritage, my white heritage, created all the architecture and the scientific discoveries that it did. I didn't make that choice. That was done for me, and that's undeniable. But you can have your Black History Month, and I don't think that there's enough history to fill a month up with. Because quite frankly, their history consists of piggybacking off other people, stealing from other people. archaeological finds have found bones of blacks that go back thousands, hundreds of thousands of years before they find bones of white people. My point is that in all that time, with 100,000, 200,000 years head start they had, they couldn't even come up with the sail to actually sail something around the world. And, you know, that's the way it works. And now they want to tell me that these people are my equal. And something Hitler made a very good point, because I thought to myself when I was thinking, I thought, well, you know, I know blacks that are doctors. But what Hitler said, he said, well, the Jews were doing that back then in Germany. And he said, what they do is they say, look, 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 there's someone, so blacks can do this too. And Hitler said, well, if you give a white person the same amount of opportunity as you take that black person, and you send them out and you give them that thing in order to get them to that level, to make them be a lawyer or a doctor or whatever. And we know from, in my country, we call it positive discrimination. In your country, we call it affirmative action. You are being in a situation now where all these blacks are being given free education. I'm talking about university. The whites have to pay fortunes in student loans to do, but the blacks are giving it free.
That's right.
So you only need to get a handful out of there. You could put 1,000 in and get 30 graduate, because all that will happen is the media will concentrate on those 30 that graduate. Now, whether they're good at their job or not doesn't matter, because if they aren't good at their job, they'll just say, oh, they're being racist. And so the employer won't even take them up on that. But the media will continually go on with this fact. Oh, look at this. And what Hitler was saying was, if you gave both the equal opportunity, then the white race person would generally exceed the black. There's people talk about things like the bell curve and what have you. I think that study is too close. There's only a few percentage in it between the two. So to my mind, it's not what people make it out to be. But certainly people have got to start thinking with a bit of kahunas and not just all the time over analysing things, and actually look at history and look at why their mouth is saying the words that they're saying. Why didn't I just say that? What am I being influenced by? Oh, I know. It's because I've seen this or I've seen this. And then you look at where that's come from, and you look at the media or the television and all that, and it's Jew. It's up to you, folks. If you want to see the white race last two more generations and then it'll just be a mixed mongrel slime, then that's fine. Just carry on doing what you're doing. But if you want to preserve the white race and you want to do your duty to your ancestors, who go back thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and if you're a pure white race person, then you'll be able to say that all through those thousands of years, they might not have had a particularly good job. They might have not seemed to amount to anything in the world. In fact, going back three, four generations, don't even know who they were. But one thing that they did do was they kept their race pure, because that meant something. And now we're being told that that means nothing. And we're being told that in one generation, two generations. So what they're basically doing is they're pissing all over your ancestors' graves. That's what they're doing by telling you this. Because one thing that these people knew was to keep their race pure. And the one thing that the Jews want to do more than anything is to make the race impure. Oh, apart from the Jew. You see, it's important the Jew should only marry another Jew. But every other race, especially the white race, they should marry everyone else. And that's all I ask people to look at. Stop hiding behind taking the easy, politically correct way out and start looking at the facts and looking at what's going on in the world. And then you'll see what's happening, and not listening to people that tickle your ears, and actually get down and do your own research, and you'll come to the same conclusions as me.
Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan. Andrew, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And really, it's an honor meeting you and having you on the program. So thanks so much for coming on, and looking forward to doing it again real soon.
Thank you very much, Dave.